Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
True Crime Brewery contains disturbing content related to real-life crimes. Medical information is opinion based on facts of a crime and should not be interpreted as medical advice or treatment. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick.
Shayna Hubers called 911 on October 12th, 2012. To report that she had killed her boyfriend in self-defense. According to Shayna, Ryan Poston had beaten her, and he was reaching for a gun when she grabbed it and she shot him. She said that Ryan was throwing her around the room like a rag doll, into furniture, the walls, and onto the floor. He was evil, she said, and he deserved what he got. But evidence did not support Shayna's version of events. Family, friends, and acquaintances would come forward to describe a very different reality from what Shayna was describing. A reality where Shayna was obsessed with Ryan, and he was actually a kind man who had been trying to break up with her for months. Join us at the quiet end for Loved to Death. Ryan Poston was a 29-year-old attorney with a bright future ahead of him. He even had a date with a beauty queen planned for the night he was killed. But Shayna claimed that he had a dangerous temper and that she was a victim of domestic violence. Was it possible that only Shayna had seen the dark side of Ryan? Or was Shayna a manipulative, cold-blooded killer who would rather see Ryan dead than see him with another woman? So I think I know the answer to that, but let's open a beer.
Okay. We got a nice Kentucky beer for this episode. It's called Rico Sauvin. It's brewed by Against the Grain Brewery and Smokehouse in Louisville. This is an Imperial IPA, 8.2% alcohol by volume. Now, Jill, I'm going to warn you right at the start. This is one hoppy son of a gun, so it might not be exactly in your wheelhouse here.
Okay.
It is a very nice beer. It's an amber color, smallish white head, a lot of lace. The aroma is of citrus and caramel, but it's kind of muted, so it's not as prominent as I would have expected. But the taste makes up for it. We got some grapefruit, some lime, some tangerine, nice caramel malt base. Very good. And like I said, very hoppy.
Well, all those flavors that you describe sound delicious. So well, yeah, I'll drink it.
It's nice and fruity.
Sure. I don't know. I like a little hop kick here and there. I think I'll be fine with it.
Okay.
Let's open it up and pass one down here to me. All right, Dickie, down here at the quiet end. Interesting case today, something fairly recent. A lot of people may have heard of it, but I think I was able to scrounge up some things people might not know about it. I hope I have.
Well, I watched some stuff with you about this case. Yeah, interesting.
Yes, absolutely. A really good psychological study.
Yes. So Ryan Poston was born in Fort Mitchell, Kentucky in 1982. Parents are Lisa Carter and Jay Poston. And he had three younger sisters, Allison, Catherine, and Elizabeth. Now, his parents were divorced, but they stayed on good terms, and Ryan was happy that the family stayed connected. He was able to have healthy relationships, in fact, with his siblings, his father, and his stepfather. He even changed his middle name to Carter, his stepfather's last name. So they must have had a pretty good relationship.
Well, you know, from the pictures I've seen, they just look like the perfect little family, to be honest with you.
Now, Lisa's second husband, Peter, loved Ryan as much as Ryan's own father did. In fact, Ryan often said that he had two dads. In a statement, Jay wrote, "Ryan enjoyed the love and pride of two good families that watched over him with every step he took. He was brilliant, he was beautiful, and above all, he was kind." Now, he did have somewhat of a privileged childhood. He did a lot of his growing up traveling around the world, and he attended international schools in the Philippines and Switzerland. Then when it was time to go to college, he chose Indiana University, where he triple majored in history, political science, and geography. That's ambitious.
That sounds like a lot of work, doesn't it?
I guess it does.
Yeah. So then Ryan went on to law school. He went to the Salmon P. Chase College of Law at Northern Kentucky University, and that's in the town of Highland Heights. His family has a tradition of working in the law, actually. His grandfather, James Poston Sr., was an attorney for 54 years. And his uncle, James Poston Jr., is still a practicing attorney. Ryan completed his Juris Doctor degree and started out his career in Cincinnati, Ohio. Now, I had to look that up because my geography isn't so great, and I thought, wow, he's in another state. But Cincinnati is just over the border of Ohio, so it's less than 10 miles away from where Ryan lived in Highland Heights, Kentucky.
Yeah, it's sort of like when we lived in Maine. We lived in York, and 10 miles away was Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Exactly, yeah. So in 2011, 28-year-old Ryan first saw 19-year-old Shayna Hubers on Facebook. Shayna was a straight-A student, and she had a real love and a bit of a talent, depending on who you ask, for drama and singing. She was attending the University of Kentucky, and so was one of Ryan's cousins, Carissa Carlisle. Ryan noticed Shayna's photos on her Facebook page. She was very pretty, smart, and fit, and he asked Carissa to befriend Shayna so he'd have a way to meet her and ask her out. So interestingly enough, it was Ryan who was the initial person to want to meet. Carissa learned that Shayna actually lived in the same apartment building as her, so that made it really easy for her to befriend her. And Shayna was very social. She was a person who really seemed to enjoy being the center of attention. Actually, maybe to the point where it wasn't very healthy, because if she wasn't getting the attention, she could be a little bit out there.
Well, we'll just have to keep her being attended to.
Yes, exactly. Now, Shayna was an only child to some very doting parents. Ryan lived an hour away from Carissa, but when he visited her in 2011, she introduced him to Shayna. Now, according to this cousin, Ryan wasn't interested in anything serious, but Shayna became obsessed with Ryan very quickly. Shayna told Carissa that she was in love with Ryan. She saw him as someone who would make a good husband for her. And after just a few months, Shayna was determined that she would keep Ryan in a relationship with her pretty much no matter what. So it did go to some extremes as time went on.
Yeah, and once Ryan saw really how obsessed Shayna was becoming, he tried to distance himself from her. He broke up with her multiple times. But every time Shayna cried and manipulated him into taking her back. Even after Ryan blocked her phone number, Shayna still persisted in contacting him and would show up at his condo unannounced.
Yeah, really got disturbing.
Yeah, I still trouble, though. I mean, if he's really serious about breaking up, I think he could do it.
Well, I don't know. She was pretty persistent, and I think that he cared about her and didn't want to really hurt her. Plus, she was really something. You're going to learn, Dick, that she was hard to deal with.
Yeah.
Not an easy person to say no to, because I don't think she was used to hearing no, and she had no coping skills for rejection. She just could not tolerate being rejected at all, it seems.
Well, and again, he compounded the problem, to my mind, by taking her back every time.
Well, it didn't help, sure, but I don't think he felt like he had a lot of choice. So it's a dysfunctional relationship. I'm not saying Shayna's 100% responsible for that, but she's 100% responsible for what happens later, I think.
Okay.
I think maybe Ryan wasn't doing the best job breaking up with her, but it certainly doesn't make it okay for her to kill him.
Well, he was still sleeping with her.
I don't know how recently he had slept with her, actually.
But he did.
He did sleep with her, yes.
Maybe he finally stopped at one point, but they would break up, they'd get back together, and they'd slide back into bed together.
Yep, that's true.
Now, Shayna graduated cum laude from college in just 3 years, and then she continued her studies, where she is working for a master's degree in school counseling. Shayna's peers at school remember her as exceptionally intelligent, and her mother, who was a retired school teacher, was really involved in Shayna's life, maybe to an unhealthy degree.
Yeah, my thoughts on her and how I see that mother is yes, I think there was some unhealthiness to this. So Shayna and Ryan only had some occasional dates, but they texted daily, and court records of the phone activity between Shayna and Ryan showed that she texted him much more than he texted her. By November of 2011, they were just off and on. They had multiple breakups, always by Ryan. Shayna was 80 miles away from Ryan's home in Highland Heights, but she was so obsessed with him, and as she became more possessive, she continued showing up at his condo unannounced, and often refusing to leave. Now, I think if she was the guy and she was doing this, then Ryan may have felt more comfortable calling the police and doing more things about it. I think there's a different thought with a young woman, because she was quite a bit younger, that maybe he needed to let her down easy, and maybe she would, you know, get over it in time. Certainly not the correct thought about it, but I think that might have been the thought in Ryan's mind, at least in the early times of this.
Uh-huh.
Now
yeah, you got to do more to convince me, but that's okay.
I don't have to convince you. I'm fine with that. Ryan wasn't in love with Shayna, though. He was busy with his career and his family. Shayna, with this history of not taking rejection well at all, wanted to settle down with Ryan. And when he didn't show interest in that, she became unhinged and obsessive. He tried to end the relationship many times, but she really just wouldn't accept it. She became more obsessed, sometimes texting him hundreds of times per day. In a text to a girlfriend, Shayna admitted that Ryan had told her he was only staying with her because she made him feel bad when she cried. So everyone says that Ryan was kind and didn't want to hurt Shayna's feelings. So whatever we think about his methods of trying to break up and whether they were successful or if they failed, I think it's pretty clear that he didn't want to hurt her feelings. But she wouldn't accept that he wanted to break up, not at all. Carissa tried to talk to Shayna and explain that she didn't need to be in a relationship with a guy who told her he was only with her because she cried and he felt guilty. Certainly, she could find someone who would care about her the way that she cared about him. But Shayna could not accept that. She just kept saying that she knew she could fix things. She was meant to be with Ryan.
Yeah, and Ryan's family and friends began to worry about Shayna's behavior. In a text to one of his friends, Ryan said, regarding Shayna, "This is getting to be restraining order level crazy. She's shown up at my condo like 3 times and refuses to leave each time." Then in a Facebook message to a friend around the same time, Ryan wrote, "She almost scares me." But he did keep taking her back. Shayna became so obsessed with Ryan that she actually recorded him while he slept and watched the videos over and over when they were apart. Yeah, that's serious.
That is serious. So then Shayna began to complain to a neighbor of Ryan's that Ryan was emotionally abusive to her. According to what Shayna told this neighbor, Ryan was very critical of Shayna's looks, and he was playing mind games with her. She said she couldn't leave Ryan because she loved him, and she continued to show up at his condo, doing his laundry, buying his groceries, and walking his dog.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
But did Ryan want her to do these things for him, or was this just part of her obsession? None of Ryan's friends, colleagues, or family members believed that he could be abusive. So they believed that Shayna was a stalker, and that Ryan was just too nice to make her leave him alone. Now, it's hard to say. I could see how a woman might feel like he's playing games with her because he's taking her back and then breaking up with her, taking her back. I think a lot of it is he was just tired. He'd come home from work and she's there and they'd fight all evening. And I think sometimes it was just easier to say, okay, whether there was sex involved or not, I don't think he was seeking her out for sex. He didn't want her to come over, clearly.
Yeah, but when she did come over, they would occasionally have sex.
I think so, yeah. But for me, I think it's because he was just tired and didn't want to argue with her anymore.
Well, okay. I just, you know, we're talking about how he's talking to friends and she's restraining order crazy and she's scares me and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
That sounds like he ought to be taking it more seriously.
Yeah, but how would he take it more seriously?
Well, I know we're going to talk about a restraining order, or that he can't get one.
Yeah.
But he can go to the police and say that he's being stalked and harassed.
Yep.
But he didn't.
Nope, he didn't. I see what you're saying, but I can also see that that would be exhausting.
Well, yeah, but
I mean, if you have someone at your house refusing to leave, and it's hours and hours of her yelling at you and not leaving, I could see how it'd be easier to just say, okay, good night, I'm going to bed. And there were times when he went in his room and locked the door and went to bed, and she would break in. So I think you do have a point here, but I think maybe you're not seeing how serious this was, how really crazy she was.
I can see how serious it was, but I'm just confused or unhappy or whatever with his response.
I understand that, but I really don't see how much more he could have done. He certainly didn't think she was going to kill him.
Well, let's suppose she shows up at his place and she won't leave.
Yes, that did happen more than once.
Why can't he call the police and say there's an intruder in my house? Please come and escort her out.
I don't know. I kind of thought that was a guy thing. Do men like to call the police and say this girl won't leave my house? I don't know,
okay,
Dick.
Okay, sure.
I think guys have a problem with that, especially she's like 10 years younger. She looks like this innocent young girl. I don't know if the police would be super into helping him with that. I just don't know. But I do see your point. And I'll definitely keep it in mind. But I think I'm leaning more towards what was he supposed to do? So in February of 2012, after Ryan had tried to end the relationship again, he texted Shayna and told her that she could tell people that she broke up with him. Because he thought, well, maybe that'll help her with accepting the blow to her ego. Maybe she just can't accept a guy breaking up with her. But that didn't work either. Shayna simply replied, I love you dearly, far more than you deserve. And that seems like crazy stuff to me. That reminds me of Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction.
Oh, sure.
I won't be ignored.
Yeah.
Then in March, Ryan replied to her text by telling her to stop texting him. Then days later, he texted her that he no longer had the patience to deal with her. Now, why didn't he get a restraining order? That's something that we're going to talk about. But according to the prosecutor in this case, Ryan didn't qualify for one because according to the laws in Kentucky, to get a restraining order, the couple had to be married or living together prior to filing for one. So I think that's a terrible law. I don't know if it's changed. But if that's the case, I could see that's an issue. Plus, I think it was my husband Dickie who told me a couple weeks back restraining orders are useless.
Well, yes.
Yes.
But you still have to go through the process.
If you can.
If you can.
Right.
Right.
But still, like you said in that other case we were discussing, if someone is determined to kill someone, a restraining order will do nothing. Because the police aren't going to come until it's too late.
I concede that.
Okay. So we agree on that.
Yeah. Well, we agree on everything.
Maybe not everything. In April of 2012, Shayna confronted Ryan about some degrading things he had apparently said about her to other people. And according to Shayna, they'd had an altercation after that, and he picked her up and threw her out onto the doorstep of his condo. Now, how do you feel about that? Is that abuse? Should he not have laid a hand on her?
Well, of course not.
Well, what do you do if she won't leave the house?
Well, we're back at square one.
Yeah.
I'm calling the police.
Okay.
Or I'll just let you stay here and try to ignore you as much as I can.
And I think that's what he did. I don't think towards the end they were really sleeping together. I have no way of knowing, but I did read about several times when he would just go in the bedroom and try and ignore her. And sometimes it was impossible to do. But yeah, throwing her outside of the door does not look good for him.
Well, no.
No. Although I can kind of understand how you'd get to that point. So Shayna also claimed that he slammed her arm in his front door as she tried to get in and collect some of her possessions. But there are no witnesses to this. There was that neighbor of Ryan's who did see a bruise on Shayna's arm that Shayna showed to her. But we're going to talk more about that as we go on, too, that maybe these bruises were self-inflicted. But after that incident, Ryan texted a friend. She came to my place on Sunday morning, and I literally had to pick her up and throw her into the hall.
Between April and July of 2012, the couple had been broken up, but they resumed their relationship in July. So according to Shayna, Ryan put conditions on their relationship from that point on. These included that she would speak less, that she would have a hobby to do while she was at his condo, and that she would join him in sexual encounters with other women. So what the hell is that?
I think it's made up, honestly, because she didn't say this until later after he was dead. And there was no evidence. No women came forward and said they had a threesome with them or anything.
Okay. So this is just Ryan's conditions, according to Shayna.
Exactly.
That's better.
And she also said that Ryan degraded her in public, making comments about what she ate and laughing at her. Now, men do this sometimes. Women do, too. But it doesn't seem like something that he had ever done, according to people who knew him and Shayna. Shayna certainly didn't have a weight issue. She was a beautiful young woman, and I just feel like she was saying these things to make him look bad. But I admit I don't know for sure on that.
No, I could see that.
But it might be a good idea to not see him anymore and just leave.
It might be. In August, Ryan tried to break up with Shayna again. And after receiving over 50 texts from Shayna, Ryan wrote back to her, "I'm turning off my phone and padlocking the door." But she continued to text. 9 hours go by, at least 100 texts from Shayna. And Ryan wrote to her, "I'm not reading any of these. Stop." But then Shayna showed up at his door. She had a key, and she refused to leave. Ryan ended up leaving her there and spending the night at a friend's.
So that might be a way to deal with it, although it's certainly not fair that he had to leave his home. But that might be a way to deal with her. Maybe if he did that enough, she'd stop coming.
Maybe. I mean, if we're going to go down the trail of him being a nice guy and not wanting to cause too much distress, then yeah, he'd keep trying to do stuff like that.
Yeah, it's still very crazy, though, that you'd leave your own home.
Oh, it's beyond crazy.
Yeah. So in a message sent to a friend of Shayna's on October 1st of 2012, Shayna wrote, "When I go to the shooting range with Ryan tonight, I want to turn around, shoot, and kill him, and play like it's an accident." And she had also sent an accompanying photo of her with a gun. Other messages were sent by Shayna saying, "Love has turned to hate, and I hate him." To a friend who was a dentist, Shayna texted, "Ryan's been begging me to ask you if you could do his veneers, but please fuck them up and make him ugly so he'll never get another girl. I hate him." So this is really crazy stuff.
Yeah, it is.
And it's getting scary. Now, one thing about Ryan, though, he did like his guns. And you know how I feel about that. Not a fan.
Right.
Right? I think it's really stupid to have a gun in your house, especially when you have this kind of situation going on. And this isn't victim blaming. Please don't take it that way. I just think having loaded guns in your home with a crazy person might not be the smartest thing.
Probably not a good idea.
Might be good to have a safe that she couldn't access if he felt that he needed to have guns.
Yeah, definitely.
A receptionist in Ryan's office building spoke with Ryan in late September, and he seemed really sad. And she asked him what was wrong. Then he asked her, "How do you break up with someone who doesn't want to break up with you?" Then, on the day he died, he came to work looking happy. and he told the same receptionist that he had a date with a new girl. So she asked Ryan if he'd broken up with Shayna, because the whole office knew about Shayna. And Ryan told her that they had broken up, and he was going to tell her that he had a date with someone else that night.
Well, if they had broken up, why does he have to tell her anything?
Because she's not going to go away. She'll be there at his house.
And what's that going to do for him? So she's going to be at his house and he's going to say, oh, sorry, I can't stay. I have a date.
Yeah, I don't know. If he thought maybe that would finally make her give up and leave, but certainly didn't.
Well, I don't see how he could possibly think that.
No. I don't know.
Yeah, because his plan isn't working.
No, it's not working. I don't know if he just didn't realize how dangerous she was. Apparently not. I don't think he could have.
He didn't.
No. So a friend of Ryan's met with Ryan that October, and Ryan told him then that he planned to break up with Shayna in person very soon. He said that telling her over the phone and in text just wasn't working, clearly.
Yeah, and so maybe Ryan was underestimating Shayna's obsession with him.
I think so, yeah.
I think very definitely.
Well, because you're living your normal life and things like this just don't happen.
No,
you don't expect it to happen. Someone says she's crazy, she's going to kill you. You think, yeah, right.
Yeah.
She'll eventually give up, right? Because that's usually what happens.
Yeah, but there are things that made her look unstable.
Oh, absolutely.
And she searched Ryan's phone to see if he was seeing anyone else. She accessed his Facebook page so she could block other women. She even contacted his neighbors to see if he was home when she was out of town. And she had also lied to him about other men in attempts to make him jealous.
Yeah, so she's trying everything possible.
Pulling out all the stops, that's
true.
Yes,
mm-hmm. Now, like I said, Ryan owned more than one gun, but according to his friends, he was very careful with them. Shayna and her mother Sharon had a very different view on this. Sharon claimed that Ryan had a shotgun, that Ryan had shot a gun in his condo several times while Shayna was there. A book was found in his condo that had bullet holes through it. But it's unknown if Ryan had shot that book inside of his condo or if he had done it elsewhere and just brought the book home. But we do know that he did have loaded guns in his home. In fact, on the night he was killed, he had a loaded handgun sitting on the dining room table. Shayna said that it was normal for him to put it there when he arrived home from work. Now, she claimed that Ryan was obsessed with his guns, and her mother, Sharon, said that she feared for her daughter's safety around Ryan.
And then on Thursday, October 11th, 2012, and this was the night before Ryan was killed, Ryan brought Shayna to his mother and stepfather's house to watch the vice presidential debate. And then Shayna spent the night in his condo. Exactly. That's what I've talked about.
I know, you can't understand that.
Nope. People in Ryan's life didn't understand why he would have Shayna stay over.
See? So they're with you.
I'm not even in his life, and I don't understand. He had already told her that he didn't want to see her that weekend.
Yeah, but he had to know by then that that wasn't necessarily going to work.
No, gotta know that.
But maybe Ryan had not wanted Shayna to stay that night. Maybe he was trying to let her down easy. Certainly wasn't working. But at 3 a.m., Shayna called her mother Sharon from Ryan's condo. According to Sharon, Shayna was emotional and wanted mama. Ugh, you know, I don't like it when adults call their parents mama or daddy or mommy or any of that. Yuck.
I know, that's one of your trigger points.
Although in some parts of the world, it's probably normal and I should not be so judgy, but I don't like it. Anyway, Sharon drove all the way from Lexington to Highland Heights to be with her daughter, and this is an 85-mile drive in the middle of the night.
Yeah, but her daughter wanted mama.
Yes. So, Sharon arrived at Ryan's condo at 5:30 a.m., and Sharon said that her daughter was shaking and grabbing her left arm, saying that her chest was hurting. Sharon sat with Shayna at Ryan's condo, holding her feet in her lap, while Ryan was in his bedroom with the door shut. When Ryan woke up the next morning, he found Shayna and her mother sitting on his couch. After Shayna settled down, Sharon took Shayna out shopping. And while out with her mother that day, she was sending texts to Ryan. telling him that her mother had taken her to the hospital and that she had been put on heart medicine for high blood pressure. So she had refused to let her mother take her to the doctor in reality, but she was texting Ryan about how thankful she was that her mother had taken her to see a doctor. So it was clearly a ploy to try and get his sympathies.
Uh-huh.
Because he'd said he didn't want to see her that weekend. They were done.
Yeah, for like the 20th time.
Yes. But we do know that he was in his room and she was upset. So it wasn't like he was sleeping with her.
Yeah.
It's not like he wanted her there that night, at least.
Yeah, as far as we can tell, he didn't.
No. Well, he didn't even come out of the room when Sharon was there. So I think he was just trying to ignore her.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
But that night, Shayna called 911 and told the dispatcher that she had shot her boyfriend in self-defense. She said that Ryan had beaten her and was reaching for the gun. During the call, she actually said that she shot him a couple more times just to kill him because he was twitching. So it's a crazy call. But I think we should listen to it. It's a little bit long, the 911 recording, but fascinating. And I think it's worth listening to.
Temple County 911.
Ma'am, I have an well, I killed my boyfriend in self-defense.
Okay, where are you at?
I'm at 12 Meadow Lane, Highland Heights, Kentucky. 41076.
Okay, 12 Meadow Lane, are you in a house or an apartment there?
It's an apartment. It's apartment suite 10.
Is it Meadow, anything else, Meadow View or something?
No, 12 Meadow Lane, ma'am. I killed him in self-defense.
Okay. Tell me again what unit you're in. It's not showing in my computer.
It's 10.
Okay, you're 12 Meadow Lane, unit number 10. Okay, hold on. What did you kill him with?
A gun, a loaded gun in the house.
And tell me where the gun is right now.
A gun is in the house.
Where at, though, ma'am? Tell me where it's at.
I laid it on the bookshelf.
Where at? Lay it on the shelf?
On the bookshelf.
Where are you?
I'm standing about 10 feet from his dead body.
Okay, are you sure that he is dead?
He's dead, ma'am. He's completely dead.
Okay. And how long ago did you shoot him?
I don't know, 15, 10 minutes, not even that long.
Like, 10 or 15 minutes ago?
Yeah.
Okay, what's your name?
My name is Shayna Michelle Huber.
I'm sorry, what is it again? Tell me.
Shayna Michelle Huber.
Huber?
Huber, H-U-B-E-R-S, Huber.
Okay, what's your name again? Shayna or Shayna?
Shayna, S-H-A-Y-N-A.
All right, Shayna, I'm just having a hard time hearing you. Okay, all right. You're going to stay on the line with me, okay? Because this is what we're going to do. The officers don't want me to stay on the line with you, so when they get there, they're going to want to know where that gun is, and we want you to get out safely too, okay?
Okay, are they going to arrest me?
Ma'am, I don't know what they'll do. We're going to send them out. I'm going to stay on the line with you, okay?
I mean, I'm not a murderer, ma'am. I just killed him.
What happened exactly? What happened?
He beat me and carried me out of the house. He beat me and tried to carry me out of the house, and I came back in to get my things, and he was right in front of me, and he reached down and grabbed the gun, and
you need an ambulance? Have you been injured?
I'm not injured, ma'am. I was thrown into the side of the couch.
Okay, and how old is he?
He's 29. He'll be 30. He would have been 30 on December the 30th.
All right, what's his name?
Ryan Carter Poston. He's an attorney in Cincinnati.
Okay, have you had a history of domestic violence with him?
Yes.
Okay, and is this your gun?
No, this is his gun. He keeps loaded guns in the house.
So he slammed you into the couch, but you don't have any injuries?
I don't have any injuries. I was just very frightened. He's a lot bigger than me. He's 6'3", 200 pounds. I'm 5'8", 120. And he picked me up and was carrying me out of the house. And I said, let me get my things at least if we're going to break up. And he wouldn't let me get my things. And when I reached around to try to get my things, I can hear myself echoing in the background, ma'am.
It's just this phone system. This phone system has got a delay.
And he pushed me down from the door all the way to the couch. And when they come here, they'll see how far that is. He threw me across the room. And I was very startled. I was laying on the floor.
Okay.
And I killed him.
Okay. Ma'am, this is what I want you to do, though. You're sure he's not... Ma'am, you're sure he's not breathing at all?
Do I have to go touch him?
No, that's okay. They actually have someone that's outside almost right now, but I'm going to stay on line with you, okay? What I'm going to tell you to do is walk to the door with your hands up because we want you to come out safely, okay? So that's why I'm staying on the line with you. Ma'am, I'm just a dispatcher. I'm nothing but a dispatcher, so I can't tell you. My job is to keep you online, make sure my officers get there safely and nothing happened to them, okay?
Ma'am, and then because he was twitching and I knew he was going to die anyway and he was making funny noises, I shot him a couple more times just to kill him because I knew he would have been...
I'm sorry, you said you shot him a couple more times after that?
Yeah.
How many times did you shoot him total?
I don't know.
Okay, because he was twitching and you knew he was going to die, so you shot him again?
Enough to make sure he was dead because he was twitching so bad and I didn't want to watch him lay there and twitch.
So you shot him instead of calling 911?
Do what? Yeah, I did because I knew he was going to die anyway.
Okay.
He was pretty bad. He was like, he just was twitching when he was pretty much dead and I shot him just so he stopped twitching. He was like, he just was twitching when he was pretty much dead, and I shot him just so he stopped twitching.
Can you see out front of your apartment at all?
I can't see out front. I can't see to the back, but not the front.
Okay.
Do I walk? Which way do I? I can hear him. Do I walk out the front door?
Nope. I want you to stay right where you're at.
Stay right where I'm at?
Stay where you're
okay.
at. Don't tell me.
Okay. Well, they tell me when they're... Well, I have to give them a key to let them in. I actually have to walk all the way down there to let them in.
All right. I want... Okay.
Is he out front?
Ma'am, what I want you to do is I want you to set
yeah.
the phone down, but I do not want you to hang it up. I want you to go to your front door. I want you to open it up, walk outside the door with your hands in front of you.
Okay, I will.
And your hands open. The officers are at
okay.
the top of the steps. But set the phone
okay.
down.
Okay, I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Okay, I set the phone down.
Set the phone down and put your hands in front of you.
Are you there? Are you there?
I'm here.
I set the phone down. I walk out the front door with my hands and palms down.
I went, yes, with your hands open and you're in straight in front of you. Officers are at
okay.
the top of the steps.
Okay, bye.
Yeah. Okay, so a lot to unpack there. I'll let you start.
Huh. Well, I think the couple things that jump into my head... She says pretty early on, I shot him in self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
So she's providing her alibi.
I think that's a big part of her explanation, is just to give herself a reason for doing this.
And the other thing I noticed was that, you know, they've been talking for a while, and she suddenly says, "I hear an echo. What's that?"
Who would give a shit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about, I shot him 10 or 15 minutes ago. That's the real shocker for me.
Yeah.
That's a long time for something like that.
He was still twitching, so I shot him again.
Well, yes, that's completely remarkable. That is amazing that she said that. And you can tell by the operator that...
she hasn't heard that one
before. That blew her away. Yes, yes. And there's a lot of talking of almost incidental explanations that have no bearing on getting him help. Obviously, that's not even a thought for her at this point.
Oh, no.
No. But a lot of explaining.
A lot.
A lot of explaining, yeah.
So Shane is taken to the police station and put into an interview room. And this is where we get to see some very interesting behavior.
It's very reminiscent of Jodi Arias and her interviews. The behavior, yeah.
So this interview was video recorded. Shana requested an attorney, but then she proceeded to talk about what had happened for about 3 hours. She talked so much that the police took turns sitting with her.
There's only so much you could take, right?
Yeah. So in the video, she's crying. Immediately after the police officer left the room, she stopped crying. So obvious, almost like a light switch.
Oh, it's like boom. As soon as the policeman leaves the room, she's normal. She's just like la-di-da, la-di-da. She's also dancing around the room. She sings Amazing Grace. And then she's chanting, "I did it. Yes, I did it. I can't believe I did that. I'm so good at acting," she says. And she told one of the police officers that her love for Ryan had turned to hate. And during this entire time, the police never had to ask her one question.
Well, they really couldn't, could they? She said, "I want a lawyer."
That's right. She did. She requested the lawyer, but 3 hours, you know, she's just chatting away.
They didn't have to say anything.
No.
Just let her free associate.
Exactly.
So Shana claimed that Ryan was whacked out on drugs and abusive to her. Before the shooting, she said, he was throwing her around. And then he sat at the dining room table and yelled at her, insulting her, saying that he hated her. She also described Ryan as evil and said he deserved what he got. She says she didn't know if anyone would ever marry her after they found out that she had killed her boyfriend. Yep, there goes those marriage proposals. She also wondered out loud whether she could keep her phone in jail or if they had showers in jail.
Well, there's just really no concern here at all for the fact that she killed another human being.
No.
And this is the man that she said she loved? That's not love.
It's all about Shana.
Absolutely.
So she said she picked up the gun from the dining room table and shot Ryan as he was getting up to come after her. But then moments later, she said that he had the gun and she grabbed it from him. After Ryan was shot and fell onto the floor, Shana said she shot him a few more times to kill him because she knew that he was going to die or have a completely deformed face.
So that tells you a lot about Shana. She thinks if your face is deformed, why bother being alive?
Right.
Yeah.
And she said that he was a very vain person and wanted a nose job. So by shooting him in the face, she said she gave him the nose job he always wanted.
Yeah, like it was funny.
And she said she had shot Ryan a total of 6 times. And then she giggled, made some crying noises for a moment, like she was sobbing. She had claimed abuse. Officers who responded to the 911 call didn't find any injuries on her, except for a small bruise on one of her shins.
Which I have more than that in any day of the week.
Yeah.
You know?
You do.
We all have little bumps and bruises here and there.
I didn't inflict them.
No.
And they're not self-inflicted.
Well, they're probably, most of the time, they're canine inflicted.
They're puppy inflicted.
Yes. So Shana was arrested for murder. In January of 2013, she entered a not guilty plea. Now, her parents couldn't afford to post bond, which was $5 million, so she remained in jail until her trial began on April 13th of 2015.
2 years in prison.
Yep.
More than 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Prosecutors said that Shada's motive for killing Ryan was that he wanted to permanently end their relationship, and that wasn't okay with her. There was a lot of text message evidence presented. Witnesses for the prosecution included Ryan's parents, sisters, friends, and Shana's former cellmates.
Uh-huh.
Carissa Carlisle, Ryan's cousin, through whom he had met Shayna, testified that Ryan had been trying to avoid confrontations with Shayna. He had even texted Carissa, asking her to speak with Shayna on his behalf. And she had gone ahead and tried to speak with Shayna multiple times, telling her, "You know, you're young, you're pretty, you're smart. You can find someone who will love you like you love them. Ryan just isn't the guy for you.
Yeah.
He's not interested." But it was just not something she could accept at all.
Obviously.
Ryan's stepfather, Peter Carter, testified that Ryan had confided in him the day before his death. Ryan had told him that he had a date with Miss Ohio, Audrey Bolt, the next night, but he was afraid to tell Shayna about it. So that's interesting, because he'd told the receptionist kind of happily that he was going to tell her.
Yeah.
But then he was afraid to tell her. So I'm not sure what happened in between there to make him more afraid. But Audrey Bolt testified that on the night of his murder, she had planned to meet Ryan at a bar in Milford, Ohio, for drinks about 9:30 p.m. She'd been looking forward to it, she said, but then, of course, Ryan hadn't shown up. He was dead.
Oh, he was busy getting shot.
Yes. A former cellmate, C. Miller, testified about Shayna bragging in jail about killing her boyfriend. She also said that Shayna had laughed about shooting him in the face and giving him the nose job he always wanted. So I guess she liked that line. She thought it was clever and she used it more than once.
Yeah, it worked. So she's got to repeat it.
Wow.
Now, Miller also testified that Shayna had discussed using the insanity defense, but she was too smart because she has the IQ of Einstein, so she decided to plead battered wife syndrome.
So that has to be something Shayna told her. I have the IQ of, like, Einstein.
Yeah, I don't think that C. Miller figured that out on her own. She was told that.
I don't think Shayna would be a very pleasant person to be around.
No. Well, it'd be okay as long as you're willing to let her dominate the conversation.
Yeah.
And talk about her.
Exactly. Also, her interview video recordings were played for the jury, and that really made her look bad.
Yes.
So Shayna was found guilty on April 23rd of 2015 after just over 5 hours of deliberations, and the jury recommended 40 years in prison for her.
Yeah.
Her attorneys asked for a new trial, arguing that they had not been allowed to present evidence that would have shown that Ryan was killed by Shayna in self-defense. So they asked the judge to recognize Shayna as a domestic violence victim, because this would reduce her time served in prison before she'd be eligible for parole. So this motion for the defense would mean that she could have to serve only 20% of her sentence before being released, and that would be just 8 years.
Well, it's not an automatic thing before she might be released or
exactly.
could be released.
But it would improve her chances.
Oh, certainly.
But being considered a domestic violence victim in Kentucky required that Shayna would have to prove that she'd been living with Ryan. They'd been domestic partners. So a hearing was held for the judge to decide on this. This is despite the fact that she told the police that they didn't live together. That was on tape. Shayna actually had an apartment of her own over 80 miles away in Lexington. So Shayna took the stand trying to convince the judge that they lived together. And the only way she could really do this was by reading some texts that weren't terribly convincing. One text was about what they would make for dinner at the condo one night. So the prosecutor confronted Shayna with evidence that she'd had sex with 10 different men during her relationship with Ryan. Shayna responded by saying, "Yeah, I might have slept with 10 guys in 2012, but she didn't see how that was relevant." In fact, she said, "How is that relevant to all this shit?" So she did not come across well in person or in the videotapes or in the texts. It's all very damning.
Yeah. Now, so the judge didn't believe that Shayna and Ryan were living together as domestic partners or that she was a domestic violence victim. So in her statement before sentencing, Shayna apologized to her family and friends and talked about how she wanted to help people and be something better. But she did not apologize to Ryan's family for killing him. And she also said that a long prison sentence would not help her or be beneficial to her. Amazing.
Yes, it was very amazing to watch her just go on and on about herself and what would be good for her. and not even say to Ryan's family, I'm so sorry, or show any kind of remorse. Not one iota.
Yeah, it's not going to help you.
Very remarkable. So Shayna was sentenced to 40 years in prison with eligibility for parole after 20 years. And the judge spoke to her before sentencing, and he said that her crime was actually the most cold-blooded killing that he had seen in his many years on the bench. He was very disturbed by it.
Yeah. Now, her attorneys appealed her conviction on the basis of one of her jurors being a convicted felon, which he somehow forgot to mention when he was being considered for jury duty.
Yes.
So they did grant a retrial, and this began on August 8th, 2018. We have a new jury for this one.
Yeah, so the prosecution's case again included the video recording of her interview with the police after she had killed Ryan. The chief of police in Highland Heights testified about the investigation into the shooting and said that the crime scene contradicted Shayna's stories about what had really happened. So although Shayna claimed that Ryan had thrown her into his television, it was in place and it was very dusty, meaning that it hadn't been touched or moved at all. Things that were sitting on the dining room table were not knocked over or askew either, contradicting Shayna's statement that Ryan had been reaching across the table for the gun when she grabbed it. And while his condo was messy, Ryan's father testified that Ryan was a bit of a slob. But there were no signs of a struggle. A shelving unit which Shayna had claimed Ryan had thrown her into had books, photos, and he even had upright bullets lined up on it. And none of that had been tipped over or disturbed. Any kind of bump into that shelving unit would have knocked some of that over.
Oh, sure. Particularly the bullets.
Yes.
So the defense had the table where Ryan had been sitting when he was first shot brought into the courtroom. And the attorney with an assistant reenacted their version of what happened. So in this version, Ryan was reaching for the gun while Shayna was on the floor near the table. And then she reached for the gun to protect herself. Now, the prosecution did their own reenactment, pointing out that the defense's story didn't match the forensic evidence. So this evidence showed that the trajectory of the gunshot was at a downward angle, which meant that Shayna must have been standing when she shot Ryan. Then the defense went over Shayna's interrogation video and her remorseless behavior. So the defense was claiming that Ryan had been standing up when Shayna shot him. But that's not what Shayna had said to the police. And then the video is shown to the jury of Shayna describing to a police officer how she shot him, how he fell out of his chair, and then she walked around the table and shot him again just to make sure he was dead.
I guess to me that's the most shocking, is that he's on the floor, probably dying pretty quickly.
Or already dead.
Or already dead, maybe, but she said he was twitching and so she went over and shot him more to make sure he was dead.
Yeah.
How can you think that that's not going to be murder?
Well, you would think that.
Even if he had been beating her or threatening to kill her, that's murder.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for that, for shooting someone when they're incapacitated and probably dying on the floor. A former medical examiner for the state of Kentucky testified for the defense that Ryan could still have been a threat to Shayna after he was shot. And I found this to be pretty ridiculous. Because he said that the chest wounds would not have stopped Ryan from being able to move.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he was shot a couple times and he was still a threat to her, is what he was implying.
Yeah, well, once he's shot in the face, he's not a threat anymore, is he?
I wouldn't think so. The defense's argument was that Ryan was the aggressor and Shayna was a victim. A toxicologist for the defense testified about how Ryan's prescription drugs could have frightening effects. He said the drugs that Ryan was on could cause incidents of hostile outbursts. So he was on Adderall and Xanax.
Okay.
Doesn't sound very frightening.
No.
No.
I mean, I guess if you look at any drug and look up side effects or adverse reactions, you can find most anything. So yeah, I mean, you can say these drugs could cause incidents of hostile outbursts, but that's maybe not in context, or the right context. So I'm not worried about that.
Okay. So the elderly residents of the condo directly below Ryan's, Doris and Vernon West, had testified in Shayna's first trial, saying that on the night of the murder, they heard two gunshots, a pause of like 5 or 6 seconds, and then another 4 shots. So in the second trial, poor old Doris was declared unable to testify due to mental infirmity. So the judge ruled that her earlier recorded testimony could be played for the jury. In this, Doris stated that she had not heard any yelling or screaming leading up to these shots. No banging around in the apartment above her. Vernon was able to testify in person. He said that he heard two shots, the sound of a person falling to the floor, and then four more shots. He also said that he didn't hear any yelling or thumping around before these shots were heard. So they're right below him. You can usually hear a lot. Whenever I've lived in an apartment with neighbors above me, you can always hear quite a bit of what's going on.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, the big part of this trial, as with the first trial, was the off-again-on-again relationship between Shana and Ryan that bordered on obsession. Their relationship had begun in the spring of 2011 when Ryan made a friend request to Shana. They met in person in April, and until that November, they saw each other at least weekly. So in their 18 months of off-and-on dating, they shared nearly 50,000 texts and photos. To me, that's mind-boggling.
I know. And it was like 50 or 100 to 1 with Shana.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is very obsessive.
Sure is.
Shana's texts to Ryan and to her friends were introduced as evidence, including texts where she spoke about wanting to shoot Ryan and ruin his good looks. Three former cellmates testified again in the second trial about Shana's descriptions of the murder and about her trial strategy of claiming to be a battered woman. Former cellmate Holly Nivens testified that when Shana described the shooting to her, she said that Ryan was just sitting at the table ignoring her. So Shana had picked up his gun from the table and pointed it at him. And then she asked him, "What would you do if I shot you?" And she said that Ryan had told her to stop it, but she'd gone ahead and shot him. So nothing like self-defense at all.
No.
Actually shocked her cellmates, who were mostly in there for drug offenses. They mostly were not violent people. So they were quite shocked by her.
So am I.
Well, yes, we all are. According to Nivens, Shana told her that she would throw things around in the condo and inflict bruises on herself in an effort to convince Ryan's neighbors that he was abusing her. Nivens also testified that she watched as Shana pretended to cry on the phone with her mother while in jail, but then she would look up and smile and wink at the other inmates. So it was very disturbing that someone was capable of this.
What an actress. Well, she already said that.
She did say she was a good actress.
Yes. So former cellmate Donna Dooley testified that Shana had admitted to killing Ryan because he wanted her to leave so he could go out on a date. She said that Shana showed no remorse and even admitted that Ryan had locked himself in his bedroom to avoid a confrontation before she opened the door using a bobby pin. And there was a search made on Shana's cell phone asking how to use a bobby pin to unlock a door.
Not subtle.
Nope.
So that inmate Cecily Miller testified that Shana laughed often when talking about Ryan's death, too. She said that Shana had also told her that she knew that Ryan had plans to go out with Audrey Bolt, Miss Ohio, on the night she killed him. Miller also said that Shana had not shown any remorse in front of her at all, either. So one thing was different about this second trial. A big thing was that Shana testified in her own defense. She admitted to searching Ryan's phone, to accessing his Facebook page and blocking other women, and to calling neighbors to check if he was home at night. She also was asked about her involvement with other men during her relationship with Ryan. In May of 2012, she got an out-of-state phone number that she used to call Ryan because he had blocked her. He wouldn't answer if he knew it was her. A couple of weeks before shooting and killing him, Shana had used a friend's phone to text Ryan and pretend to be a potential legal client. So she really had no boundaries whatsoever.
No.
Shana then testified about her sex life with Ryan, claiming that he was into rough sex and that sometimes he got carried away and took things too far. She said that she had difficulty having an orgasm and that would make Ryan angry with her and he would abuse her. But then texts between Shana and Ryan told a totally different story. For example, in one texting conversation, Shayna tells Ryan that she had corsets that they could use to role play, and wouldn't that be hot? And Ryan responded, I really don't think I'd be into it. So it seems that he really did not have any interest in having sex with her, at least near the end there.
Yes, that's true. Now, when questioned about the day of the shooting, Shayna testified that when she went to his condo that evening, she asked him about his day. Now, he seemed angry to see her there. He called her names, she said, and she criticized her family and called her unstable and crazy. She said that when she tried to retrieve her possessions and leave the condo, Ryan grabbed her, picked her up by her bra and pants, and threw her into another room. She added that Ryan fell on top of her with all his weight, pulled her hair, and jerked her head to the point where she feared he would break her neck. He was continuing to scream at her, she claimed, but she was finally able to get out from under him. However, the struggle continued.
So I know that when someone's in a domestic violence type situation, it's easy to say, why didn't she just leave? But this is different. He didn't want her there. So yeah. Why didn't she just leave? She could have walked out that door any time.
Yeah, but I think she was ready to kill him.
Yes, I think you're right. I think it became a plan. Shayna claimed not to remember what happened next, but the next she remembered, she was sitting near the dining room table, and she said that Ryan was hovering over her. She was crying, she said, but when she stood up, Ryan pushed her back down to the floor. Then he grabbed the gun, pointed it at her, and told her that he could kill her and get away with it. He put the gun down and walked around the table while still verbally abusing her, she said, and then he sat at the table. When he began to stand, she said, he was reaching across the table, and she wasn't sure at that point if he was reaching for the gun, so she got up off the floor, grabbed the gun, and shot him. After the first two shots, he let out a loud noise that sounded like an animal, she said, and it freaked her out. He was on the other side of the table on the floor, and he was twitching. So she shot him again to kill him because he was twitching and she didn't want to watch him die. So she didn't even say, I didn't want to see him suffer. She just didn't want to watch him die.
Yeah, well, it's understandable.
Then she looked for her phone, which she said took her a while. You know, this is the explanation for why it took her so damn long to call for help.
Yeah.
And she first called her mother and told her what had happened before she called 911. That just looks bad.
It does.
Because when she finally called 911, at least 15 minutes had passed. When Sharon was asked on the stand what she told her daughter on that call, she said that she told her daughter, Shayna, call 911 and tell them exactly where you are and exactly what happened. But prosecutors speculated that Shayna had called her mother first to get some help in creating a defense before she called 911. And her mother just adored her so much, and Shayna could do no wrong. I can picture her mother helping her to come up with a defense.
Oh, sure. In the second trial, the defense put much more emphasis into Shayna's claims of domestic abuse. Mental health experts testifying for both the prosecution and the defense diagnosed Shayna with borderline personality disorder. BPD is characterized by distortions in the patient's perception of themselves and others, often resulting in turbulent relationships and a profound fear of abandonment. Borderline patients also exhibit intense mood swings due to their instability, and this can result in dysfunctional relationships.
The expert for her defense also concluded that Shayna had post-traumatic stress disorder from her childhood. She would testify that she was sexually abused in a public restroom by a stranger and that she had told her mother, but that they didn't report it to the police.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. I like to believe victims and women, but there's no proof that this happened.
No. And this was when she was like 5, she claimed, right?
Yeah, it was when she was very young.
So why wouldn't she report that?
Yeah, that's why I don't know if it's true, because I feel like a parent would report that. And it just seems a little convenient that it was a stranger, that they can't give a name or identify the person.
Yeah.
Because normally, I'm not saying this couldn't have happened. Of course it could have happened. But normally, when children are sexually abused, it's by someone they know, and we all know that.
Right.
Plus, I really can't see her mother letting her go into a restroom by herself as a young child. Her mother was very, very controlling, very involved in her daughter's life. So testimony by forensics experts suggested that Shayna first shot Ryan in his head, then fired the other 5 shots into his body. One expert testified to Ryan being shot 3 times while he was sitting in the chair and the other 3 times when he was lying on the floor. But 4 of his gunshot wounds had stippling, meaning that the gun had been less than 3 feet away from him when it was fired.
Yeah, well, they were across the table from each other, so pretty close contact.
Yes, and then she walked around the table when he was lying on the floor and shot him.
Right, so...
So she was leaning right over him, it looks like.
That's not a surprise that there was stippling.
Well, he was laying on the ground, helpless, and she leaned over him and shot him.
Yeah.
You can't get much more brutal than that. So the jury deliberated for about 5 hours in the second trial, about the same as they had in the first trial, and Shayna was found guilty of murder. After the jury was given the choice between first-degree manslaughter, second-degree manslaughter, reckless homicide, and murder. So they gave her the worst one, and she was sentenced to life in prison. But of course there were appeals.
Of course. Her attorneys alleged that the trial court erred in multiple decisions. One was the refusal to strike 6 jurors for cause, improperly admitting evidence of her lack of remorse, disallowing 2 defense exhibits, excluding text and Facebook messages by Ryan, where he discussed his drug use. Now this is Adderall for concentration and Xanax for anxiety. And the Xanax was because he was going through a lawsuit with a former partner.
Yeah, in addition to that, there were some texts and Facebook messages to friends where he had said some violent things about his ex-law partner wanting to do things to him. And that was going to be used to show that he had a violent side, but it wasn't allowed. And Shayna's attorneys thought it should have been.
Okay. So, and they also raised the issues of allowing victim impact evidence during the guilt phase of the trial. They permitted the testimony of Audrey Bolt and declaring Doris West unavailable in allowing her tape testimony.
Yeah, the appeal included a move to strike 6 jurors for bias because they were exposed to pre-trial publicity or they had stated that they were unable to follow the court's instructions. They also presented information about 3 jurors who were allegedly involved in an improper conversation about Shayna before the trial. So one juror was heard telling another juror that Shayna Hubers was a murderous bitch who did this in cold blood and who has the audacity to walk around the courtroom smiling. But these jurors were questioned and denied the claim. The appeal regarding the other 3 jurors was on the basis of their knowledge of the case and Shayna's prior conviction that they had before going to the second trial. But the court declined this argument as well, because there's no constitutional prohibition against jurors having knowledge of a case. So it's acceptable trial strategy for an attorney to exclude a person for having this knowledge, but it's definitely not mandated. And in cases where a defendant is successful in getting a new trial, it's really expected that jurors might have knowledge of the former conviction.
Oh, yeah. That wouldn't be a surprise.
No. So the court believes that jurors can set aside their secondhand knowledge of a case, especially after being individually questioned and sworn under oath to set the information aside. So in the case of the jurors in her trial, no actual bias was found at all.
Many other activities by jurors, including Google searches and reading newspapers, were brought up in the appeal, but all were found not to cause prejudice or make the trial unfair. And the court also found that not allowing a change of venue did not prevent a fair trial. And as for the testimony about her lack of remorse, the court found that her lack of remorse was relevant because it proved that the murder was intentional and not an act of self-defense.
Yeah, so when all these arguments for her appeal were addressed, the only potential error found was Ryan's father, Jay Poston's guilt phase testimony, which crossed over into the realm of victim impact testimony, but then it was found to be a harmless error. Didn't affect the outcome at all. So the court affirmed Shayna's conviction and at least 20 years in prison.
Yep, so there we are. Shayna says that she fell in love with a transgender woman named Unique Taylor in prison, and the two were married in June of 2018. This was a 2-minute jailhouse ceremony at the Campbell County Jail, according to the Cincinnati Inquirer. So, unfortunately, Shayna and Unique divorced in March of 2019. They were married for 9 months. Shane had told the judge she had not spoken to her spouse since January of 2019, and she filed for divorce a few days later.
Well, yeah, because Taylor was transferred to another facility in Tennessee.
Right.
On other charges.
Though the judge did agree that Shayna's life sentence meant that the marriage was irretrievable. So Shayna has kept a profile on writeaprisoner.com. And Jill, I want you to read what she's written about herself.
It is funny, right? Because it kind of comes across as like a dating profile.
Oh, for sure.
So I'll read it for you. My name is Shayna Michelle Hubers. I'm a Lexington, Kentucky native and a 2012 graduate of the University of Kentucky with my Bachelor's of Science degree. After making the Dean's List in 2010 and 2011, I completed undergrad in only 3 years and was in graduate school obtaining my master's degree at the time of my October 2012 arrest and incarceration at only 21 years old. I'm a tall and thin brunette standing at 5'8.5" tall and 120 pounds, with lots of long, wavy, golden brown hair, big steel blue doe eyes, and a wide, bright smile on a heart-shaped face. It has been almost 8 years now that I've been locked away from the free world. I was tried twice on the same court case, and my conviction is currently under appeal in the Kentucky Supreme Court of Appeals. I have grown much since the 21-year-old girl I was in October of 2012, at the time of my arrest. I am looking for someone who won't judge me by my past, but by the woman I've become. No one really knows or can explain what I've been through besides me. It can be hard being judged by false conviction theories in the media, used to obtain television ratings and a conviction and maximum penalty in court. I appreciate someone who can look beyond that to share intelligent conversation and hopefully build a lasting connection and friendship. So, if you want to write to Shayna, there you go.
writeaprisoner.com.
Yep.
She's looking for some dates, it sounds like.
Well, it seems to me like things worked out the way that they should have for Shayna. But, you know, what's sad is I don't think she's going to learn anything.
I'd be surprised.
Doesn't seem like she has so far.
Nope.
All right. So TCB's music was written and produced by Tristan Capel. If you have a case suggestion that you'd like to share with us, or comments or opinions on a case that we've covered, you can send us an email to truecrimebrewery@tiegrabber.com. Or if you're the kind of person who wants her voice to be heard, we have the option for you to leave us a voicemail. And that can be done very easily on our website, or there's a link in our show notes. We love to listen to voicemails, and we really appreciate any feedback that comes in. If you'd like to get all your future TCB episodes without commercials and get access to our members-only episodes that come out each month, you can become a subscriber at tiegrabber.com. And there's a long list of episodes in our premium feed that are available to our new subscribers, so it would give you plenty to binge. Might actually be handy to keep those in your back pocket for times when you just need to escape.
Yes.
So if you're interested, just click on subscribe at tiegrabber.com or click on the link in our show notes.
There's also a Patreon page where you can support us and get access to the premium show on the webpage or on your podcast app. We also have all kinds of merchandise for sale at tiegrabber.com/shop if you want to treat yourself or buy a gift for a fellow true crime buff. So enough selling ourselves. Let's do feedback.
Okay.
And as I've been holding to form, I've got two voicemails and one email. So the first voicemail is from Susan, and she has a case suggestion.
Hi, Dick and Jill. You'll have to excuse me. I have a bit of laryngitis. I wanted to tell you how much I enjoy your podcast, and I have a suggestion for you. I believe it's been suggested before, but it is a really fascinating case. It's the case of Yazid, and I think her name is Rosemary Issa, spelled E-E-S-A or E-S-A. They were a couple that was situated in Ohio, I want to say the northern Ohio area, and he murdered her using cyanide, and he disappeared from the United States, and I think he flew over to either Jordan or it could have been Lebanon, and he was there for 3 years, and there was an international manhunt that went on to try to find him, and several of the programs that I've seen that have covered this case have covered it extremely well, except they don't really say how it was that he escaped capture for so long while he was overseas. And I was wondering, because you two seem to be so good at researching things, if you might be able to really dig down deep and find out what this guy was doing for 3 years while they were looking for him. I would really appreciate your doing that. And I don't know, perhaps you've done it already. But if you have, c'est la vie. Thanks so much. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Now, we just saw an episode about this on 2020, I think, maybe Dateline, one of the two.
Yeah, it's quite a coincidence because it was just a week or two ago that we saw that and thought that would be an interesting case to cover.
I turned to Jill and I said, Jill, we might want to do this.
I think in answer to Susan's question about why it took so long, I think he went to Lebanon and there was no agreement with the U.S. to extradite. So he was really untouchable until he flew...
He flew someplace.
To London or something?
Yeah, I think somewhere in Europe. And he got picked up off the plane.
Yeah, so it's definitely something that we could cover. It's the kind of case that I like to cover. Something, you know, a domestic case like that is usually our wheelhouse, right?
Yeah.
So absolutely. Thank you, Susan. I've been fighting a little laryngitis myself, so I have some empathy for you there.
And now we have another voicemail from Laura with a case suggestion.
Hi, Dick and Jill. My name is Laura, and I'm calling from Louisville, Kentucky, and I have a case suggestion for you. It's called The Trinity Murders, and it's the story of two young high school seniors on their way to a football game. They got lost. This happened back in 1984. They pulled over two men and asked for directions, and in the process, they were abducted and murdered. It was a big story around here for a long time. The two murderers are still in prison. I believe one of them is on death row. But I would love to hear your take on it. This was back in 1984, September 29th, 1984. Again, Trinity Murders. The two victims were Scott Nelson and Richard Stevenson. Love to hear your take on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. So isn't it funny that she's suggesting a case in Kentucky, which is what we're doing right now?
Right. This is Louisville and the other one is Lexington and Highlands, whatever. But yeah, Kentucky cases.
So this kind of case she's describing is basically my worst nightmare. Sounds really horrific.
These kids in high school are going somewhere and got lost or didn't know where they're going. Went into, I guess, a restaurant or something. Something on the road. And these two guys said, well, give us a ride because we're going there too. We'll give you directions. Except they abducted them, took them to one of their two apartments, tortured them, and killed them.
Yeah, so this is really a devastating case. Of course, when I hear Trinity Killer, since we've been watching the new Dexter New Blood series, it makes me think of John Lithgow, who's really a sweet man, but...
Not in that episode.
No, but that's where my mind goes with that. So this was in 1984.
It was.
It's a while back.
We'll look into that.
Absolutely. Okay, so we do have an email from Patty, and I'm going to have you read it, Dick, because my throat's a little iffy.
Okay. So Patty says, I thought since you guys mentioned an interest in covering missing persons cases, I'd let you know about another case from my area, which is Memphis. This may be especially interesting to both of you as it regards the disappearance of Dr. Cheryl Pearson. She came from a good family. She was single, had a nice home, was a partner in a thriving practice, and her specialty was pediatrics, which is a specialty near and dear to my heart.
All the best doctors are pediatricians.
You got it. Dr. Pearson was loved by her family, her friends, staff, and patients, and held in high regard by her peers. She loved basketball, disappeared after attending a Memphis Grizzlies home game. Now, this case has been unresolved despite years of work by the Memphis Police Department. In fact, it's as if she vanished into thin air and left no trace of what happened the night she disappeared. Now, you have your themes that get your interest. This is something that strikes me.
Mm-hmm.
A person just disappearing.
Sure.
It's as if they were never there.
Right.
Fascinating.
It really is. Very sad. So I think you should look into this, Dickie. As a fellow pediatrician, you need to look into that.
I'm planning on it.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Patty.
Yes.
Thank you, everyone, for your case suggestions, your comments, and just for coming down to the Quiet Inn and giving us a listen. We certainly appreciate it.
Every day.
I hope that you're enjoying your holidays, and we will see you in 2022. We actually won't be back with an episode until the second week of January because we're beginning our new schedule of putting out an episode every other week instead of every week. And I think there'll be a lot of benefits to that, so don't be too sad about it. I think we might all end up liking that a lot. You think so?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I mean, the amount of work that you put in on each episode is incredible. So.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say that. That's not the problem. I just think if I have more time, I could do a better job.
You will.
Yep. Thank you so much, everyone. And we'll see you next time at the Quiet End.
We'll save some chairs for you.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.